5. Him charged in Senate race. The California Senate race eclipsed the presidential campaign briefly today when incumbent Reverend Senator Cliff Jacobs, New Right Coalition, denounced his opponent Raven Starwater, Earth Powers Collective, as a Satanist. The Earth Powers Collective is a bunch of hippie freak Satanists who smear the sanctity of this high office, said Jacobs before a supportive crowd. If Ms. Stillwater looked into her crystal ball, she'd see who's going to win this election. Good always triumphs over evil. In a press conference at the Earth Powers headquarters in Haight-Ashbury District of San Francisco, Reverend Starwater denied allegations that her organization has ever tolerated an unrecognized religious group such as Satanists. For her own religious beliefs, she said, "My citizenship card is valid. The nature of my goodness has been validated by the United States government. The Reverend Senator is not qualified to judge the validity of my religion." The Earth Powers is a cooperative of New Age spiritualists. The organization achieved governmental accreditation only last year, thanks in part to the controversial Taft-Palace Act. Taft-Palace guarantees accreditation to any religious group, regardless of numbers of members, which can prove a long history of the practice in America or a belief in one God. The act was ratified due to pressure from the American Indian Movement and the American Civil Liberties Union and the American Catholics. Despite the act's stated favoritism towards original American rights, it was the Wiccans of Massachusetts who were the first to register under this act, claiming their history of practice in America can be substantiated by the Salem witch trials. As more and more formally outlawed groups discovered ways to prove a history of practice, the act has fallen under harsh criticism. Presidential candidate Etienne Lefebvre, New Right, has vowed to find a way to strike a blow against this regressive act and make America safe from the lunatic fringe.
You're listening to Lyda Morehouse, reading from her new novel, The Archangel Protocol. Lyda Morehouse was born in California in the summer of love, which might explain her unusual first name that we keep on saying Lydia for instead, except that her parents swear they weren't hippies. Beatniks maybe, but definitely not hippies. Lyda will be signing the Archangel Protocol at the Ridgedale B. Dalton's on Saturday, June 16th from 2 to 4 p.m. Welcome to Right on Radio.
Well, thanks.
You can get a little closer to your microphone, though.
Oh, okay.
You're as high as I can get you. And
okay.
We know that our listeners want to listen to you. I'll tell you, I haven't finished the book yet. I'm probably about halfway into it, and it's really, really interesting. It's kind of funny and... I find it very timely because of the, the conjunction between technology and the religious right. It was kind of interesting. Do you want to explain where you got that idea from?
Yeah, actually, I started writing this book a while ago, and I was writing it sort of near the tail end of the Reagan-Bush thing. And I think I was really thinking a lot about sort of the Pat Buchanan presidential race where he said that Jesus had sent him, you know, to be president. And I thought, well, what if that were even more, prevalent? And so I came up with this crazy universe where America is on the verge of a theocracy and all sorts of crazy stuff starts happening.
I think it's interesting. You've got this thing called the link, which is kind of like the internet, and it's kind of like what does William Gibson call it in his books? It's the same concept where you're jacked into a kind of system, except in the other science fiction books I've read, it's usually a sinister sort of thing. And in your book, at least so far, the link doesn't seem all that sinister, though. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something.
No, I think you're right on. I guess I don't see technology necessarily as a sinister thing. So, and the internet as it is now is sort of it has its sinister aspects, shall we say, but it also provides some kind of community and entertainment and that sort of thing. So I guess I projected a future in which the link would be a little bit more like that. It would be a place for commerce, a place for entertainment and communication. So that's what I was going for with that.
Yeah, and if you're excommunicated.
Yes, that's my little clever. Yeah, in this world where it's a theocracy, the heroine is excommunicated both literally in terms of the link, but also from her religion. Which is,
and everyone has to register for a religion, otherwise they're not.
Yes, as in my little fake newscast there.
Yeah.
And I should say that at the end of every chapter, I have sort of either a some kind of letter or newscast or something, and so I have this little way of showing the world in the book without having to hit people over the head with.
Okay, okay. What I find interesting is also your main character who's been excommunicated has sort of a spiritual conscience, which I think is an interesting balance to have in the book, because obviously you're critiquing the way religion is kind of being used in public life right now.
Yeah, I really purposely did not want to Christian bash, partly because science fiction, I think, has a bad reputation for being so focused on technology, almost to the exclusion of any kind of religion or spirituality. And so I tried to pick write a character, I guess I picked her on some, you know, subconscious level, write a character in which she is spiritual, although she's a seeker, you know, so she's not necessarily by whatever book she might follow. And so, yeah, I really wanted to have that contrast between sort of what the new right wants us to be like and what spirituality often is for most of us, whatever your bent.
Okay.
So.
And then, of course, you also pick up on this whole angel thing.
Yeah.
Talk about the angel.
Actually, I also wrote those in reaction to sort of the fluffy, you know, I don't know if you remember when those were very popular. People had little guardian angel pins.
Oh, they're still popular.
Are they still?
So.
Oh, God. Well,
I think it's still revving up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I really was writing a reaction to that because I figured, you know, if you're going to believe in angels, they have to be sort of frightening and, you know, dun, dun, dun. So I really, I really wanted to write my angels who would be more like that. Not the fluffy little guardian angel who watch over you, but, you know, if there's God or whoever has a message for you, then I just thought they would be more dramatic. And so I wrote a bunch, and I decided, being a Unitarian, that they can't all come from one place. So Michael, you may not have gotten this far, but Michael is a sort of Christian, loosely. Jibril is a Muslim. And then I have Raphael, who is Jewish. And then Ariel, who shows up at the end, is a transsexual Buddhist.
Oh, okay. So this explains why we have so many different religions, because the angels are all over the place.
That's right.
Okay, well, that's a new way of bringing diversity.
Yeah. Well, I also get really tired of science fiction where it's like this future is very white. You know, it's just, you know, people out in space seem to be only from America, and apparently only from a certain section of America. And so I decided I can't write that.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't even reflect my life. So how could it reflect the future?
Yeah, okay. I'm curious now. I know the process of writing a novel is a very long one. So you said you started this during, like, the Reagan
era. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Well, the reason I'm asking is that as I was reading, and, you know, like, Michael's the first angel you meet, and the descriptions, I thought, wow, I already had an image for him because I'm a big fan of Xena Warrior Princess. And did you see the episodes where, and I think he was in Hercules too, because they share a lot of characters back and forth. And I thought, well, wow, yeah, this is the same thing. But now, I'm guessing that you had already written the character by the time that came out.
Yeah, and luckily before John Travolta did Michael too.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, yeah. Well, he's a different kind of, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, part of the process was that writing it, I can barely even remember how long ago it was, but then the whole process of sending it out to an agent to then send it out to different places takes them an amazing amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I really can't even remember when I finished it, but I had a party. I do remember that. I have been having a party for every step of the process.
Okay.
My advance review copies back, I threw a party, you know, and the book comes out, I throw a party. So
that's a good way to look at it.
It's my first book.
Yeah. Now, I know that you're also part of kind of a pretty supportive science fiction writing community here in the Twin Cities. Can you talk at all about that?
Yeah. Minnesota, Twin Cities is the best place to be a science fiction writer. There's just a ton of really good, really serious science fiction writers here. Eleanor Arneson, Laurel Winter, Terry Geary, Pat Reedy, Steve Bruce used to live here. I mean, there's just a ton of people who are in the writing community in science fiction. Plus, there's this new sort of group. A lot of people, there's a science fiction workshop called Clarion, and a lot of people from Clarion have been settling here. And so there's a lot of sort of up-and-coming writers who are in town, and I've been involved in a lot of writers' groups with them, and it's just a lot of energy for science fiction here right now. So, yeah, I'd say this is a highly supportive place. I'm in three writers' groups. All of them are really, like, gung-ho. So it's great.
If there's a budding science fiction writer out there listening to us, how would you recommend that they get involved in some of these support groups?
Well, I would actually recommend that they go to Uncle Hugo's bookstore and ask Scott Imes, who's behind the counter most days. He often knows good connections. They can ask Eric Heidemann, who's a sort of a fan, reader, writer. Or just go to my webpage, which is www.lightandmorehouse.com, and click on hot link to my address, and I would be happy to put them in touch with one of these people who could hopefully, just right now I don't believe there's any open writers groups, but you know, if enough people are interested, they can certainly form one, and there's enough of us here who have done that we could help mentor them, I think.
Okay. Spell your name so people
can. Oh, I'm sorry, yes, Lyda Morehouse would be Lyda Morehouse, is Morehouse, and it's one word.com.
So you've got your own name.com. You didn't have to buy it from somebody who...
Yeah, like I was afraid somebody was going to cyber squat, but you know.
You never know. You never know. Yeah. Do you have another portion of your book you'd like to read?
Oh, sure. I would be happy to. I'll read that in actual narrative bit.
Okay.
How much?
Just a couple minutes.
Okay. Stop me.
Okay.
Okay. Chapter 7. Michael let himself in the apartment complex and down a flight of stairs. I stayed 2 steps behind him. Parking up a couple was my idea. Bad enough I had to park my classic in a lot in Hell's Kitchen. At least I could do was to stow it in slightly more affluent upper levels. At apartment 301, Michael stopped and knocked once. Without waiting for a response, he entered. I hesitated only briefly before following him through. Gabe, Michael called out. Water came on in the back of the apartment, followed by the clinking sound of someone doing dishes. Michael headed towards the sound. Gabe! Michael didn't invite me to follow him into the kitchen, so I closed the door behind me. I heard the lock engage automatically. A tricolor flag spanned 2 windows. The top edge was held in place by several thumbtacks. It did double duty as a curtain, although not very well. Light from the passing cars flashed through the red threadbare material, first brown, then yellow and green. The pattern seemed familiar, but I couldn't be certain. Pan-African or some such, I decided, as I scanned the rest of the apartment. The walls were as thin as the cloth, and the street noise filled the tiny apartment. Gaudy wallpaper peeled away from the edges of a water-stained ceiling, and a single bare light bulb hung dangerously low overhead. Despite the light it cast, the apartment felt homey. Brick and board bookshelves lined most of the walls under the windows. 5 worn but comfortable-looking chairs circled about a battered end table. The smell of dark roasted coffee wafted in from somewhere and mingled with the strong aroma of curry. I snooped around for something that resembled biotech equipment, though I would have settled for anything made in this decade. The only things I found were dusty hard copy tomes on Islam, the Baha'i movement, and an ancient-looking copy of the Quran, Political History and Malcolm X. Not one medical journal among them. As a roach scuttled across one of the bookshelves, my stomach fluttered. My only hope is that a sterile lab equipment was hidden behind one of the bookshelves like something out of James Bond. An eruption of masculine laughter came from the kitchen. Through the rumble of their voices, words were impossible to distinguish. The sound had an odd pattern and cadence. It was fast-paced and rose at the end of phrases, definitely not English. Just as I was ready to burst in and introduce myself, a black man stepped into the hallway. His skin was a well-worn walnut hue, so deep it was almost seemed to glow. A dazzling smile still graced an open and expressive face. Dark brown eyes twinkled when he saw me. Salt and pepper hair was cut short on the sides. He wore a loose-fitting button-down shirt and jeans and looked like the farthest thing from a biotech. I'm Jabril. You must be Deidre. He smiled again, this time just for me. He took 2 steps, closing the distance between us, and extended his hand. No. I took his hand and pumped it once, grinning maniacally. I noticed a bright flash of something embedded in his forehead between his eyes. You have one of those new microchip tattoos, I asked. Jabril nodded sagely. Would you like to see it? I'd always been curious how those things worked, so I said yes. He closed his eyes for a moment, and the chip began to glow slightly. When I stared at it, I saw a swirling, gilded script moving from right to left between his eyes. It's beautiful, I said, but I can't read the words. What does it say? Strolling out of the kitchen, Michael leaned against the doorframe. There is no God but Allah, Michael translated, and Muhammad is the prophet of God. Heck of a statement, I breathed. With a hearty laugh, Jabril clapped me on the shoulder. You're right, Michael. Definitely refreshing. Didn't I tell you so? Michael smiled. Deidre is a regular firebrand. Our brief dash in the rain had soaked Michael's leather jacket. He stood so close that I could smell the musty, wet odor. The curls of his hair hung enchantingly over one eye. I wondered how it would feel to reach up and run my fingers through it. I cleared my throat, and a soft punch to his arm hid my growing embarrassment. You getting sweet on me, big guy? Jabril's bright grin faded. My prince? He arched an eyebrow. A discussion for another time. Michael glared at Jabril. Smile he gave Jabril held a trace of tightness. Of course, but if you want to talk about it, I've been there, you know. Who could forget? Michael said with a smile.
So that's Lyda Morehouse reading from her new book, The Archangel Protocol. Now, at that point, the main character doesn't know that she's got two angels here. She just thinks that these are extremely nice-looking guys.
That's right. Yes, they're all so beautiful.
They are beautiful. In your next book, you'll have to write an ugly angel, I think.
Yeah, I probably should.
Yeah, so I had a question. Jabril.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Michael I'm just anglicizing his name to Gabriel, but mm-hmm. Gabe. This is the Archangel Gabriel. More technologically focused, or am I just?
Well, interestingly, Gabriel is the patron saint of telecommunications.
Oh.
According to the Pope. And I thought that was hilarious. So I went ahead and, you know, I merged the two. The Jabril is, of course, the one who gave the Quran to Muhammad. But then I also thought, well, so there you go. He's also a patron saint of communications. It'll all work together. So, yeah, he's a little bit more technical savvy.
Okay, so you've done your research.
I read a lot about angels. Yeah. And demons. Which are just as much fun.
Yeah, because you've got someone named Morningstar in this.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's very interesting, too. Okay. Well, I think I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll leave it hanging so readers can go, ooh, what does she mean?
How is it going to end? Will it end in an apocalypse?
That's right.
Okay. You've been listening to Lyda Morehouse. She's been reading from and talking about her new novel, The Archangel Protocol, and Lyda will be signing copies of it at Ridgedale B. Dalton's on this Saturday, June 16th.